birthday party?
Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. All right, Abracadamits, I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas and very happy holidays. We have made it. We are coming up now to the last week of 2021. 2021 has been a very interesting year for me, I gotta say. The Abracadam Podcast had its full year of 2021. So that was cool. So professionally, this has been a great year for me. Professionally, it has. Now, mentally and physically, boy, it's been a doozy. I'm not going to lie to you, man. It has been a doozy. It's been a tough one. So my goal in 2022 is to try to have a better balance, career-wise, and mentally and physically. I want everything on the same level. That's my goal. So let's hope it turns out well. Hope you have some goals for the new year coming up too, because I think goals are a good thing. Me and my good friend Nate, we're talking, if you do have goals, write them out. Write them down, like get a whiteboard or a dry erase board and write these things down. That way they're staring at you every day, hanging up on the wall. Look at it. Try to get those things done. Get those things accomplished. That's what I'm going to do for 2022. And maybe you should too. There's some things you want to get done. Anyways, let's give some quick show announcements real quick. New Year's Eve, I'm going to be at Little Joe's in Maynardville, Tennessee. I've been there, done shows there before. It's a great time. Only $12 a ticket. I know it's kind of an odd price, but 12 bucks a ticket. They'll be selling at the door at Little Joe's, Maynardville, Tennessee. Come see me. We're going to bring in 2022. Then January 7th, I'm going to be with the very funny Shelly Belly. She's a big TikTok star. If you get a chance, check her out. She's also on season 3 of The Circle on Netflix. Me and her are going to be at the Grove Theater in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and that's going to be January 7th. And you can get tickets at brownpaperticket.com. Or you can buy them at the door. So two show dates coming up. Definitely get out and catch a show. Anyways, that being said, let's get right in to today's sponsors for the Abracadam Podcast.
Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451. Or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos.
All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest is somebody, well, first of all, he's involved in so many cool things in this area. He is on the board of the Knox Pride, and if you've never been to the Knox Pride Festival, it's one of the best ones around. He's also involved with Salome and another show, Bear It All. He is a very talented male burlesque performer, but also, not just that, he's also got a really, really cool Dolly Parton story. That's right, the Queen of Country, yes, Dolly Parton, has came and watched one of their shows. Super cool. I wouldn't know what to do. That would blow my mind. So, if you will, Abracadamits, set back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the very talented Barry Manatees. All right, I'm excited with today's guest on the Abracadam Podcast. We got Barry Manatees. How you doing, Barry?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Well, man, I've known you for a few years, and I believe we've shared the stage a couple times. But yeah. If you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the Abracadam listeners?
I will. My name's Barry Manatees, and I am a burlesque performer and producer. I co-produce and own Salome Cabaret, Camp King Entertainment, Barrett All Burlesque, and the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival.
Wow, man. I mean, you have to be a busy dude. A lot of things going on there.
It is. I mean, it's been nice this past almost 2 years. We actually were just talking about it today. It's almost been 2 years since we've been on the stage. So, but we're coming back in January.
Oh, man, that is so awesome, man. That is awesome. Well, okay, first of all, this is the interesting thing with you right off the bat, because most of the time when people think of burlesque performers, they immediately think of females. But you, sir, are a male. So what is that like? What is it like being a male burlesque performer?
Well, not only am I a male burlesque performer, I am a plus-size, hairy male burlesque performer.
Now, let me make sure I get this right. With the name, I guess you would be a bear, correct?
Correct.
All yes. Right.
Yeah. The origin of my name refers to me being a bear and manatee, because they are known as the sea cows. And so my original tagline was the stripping sea cow. I used to be much bigger than I am now and lost a lot of weight. And my name, my tagline just kind of gravitated to the Papa Bear Burlesque, because that's what I do. I take care of my folk. So I'm a true Papa Bear when it comes to that. So that my tagline just kind of shifted to that. But I kept the name Barry Manatees.
Well, you know, I love the name, but first of all, I was about to say, I mean, you're not that big. I mean, you're not a fat guy. Let me say that you're not a fat guy. So Barry Manatees, but that's also a clever name. That's the other thing I love about burlesque performers, period. This is the thing I love about burlesque performers is the freaking creativity in their names. You know,
you have to. I never thought I would be a performer, so I never put thought into what a name would be until I was doing my debut act, and so it came down to, well, what are you going to be called? And, you know, and at that time there wasn't a lot of one male performers, but two male performers like myself. So it had to be something catchy and clever, and I had to beat people to the punch of, you know, me being a bigger person, and that's why I was the stripping sea cow. But just as this art form evolves, and so did my persona as a performer and the intentions behind my name.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this. Let's first start out. Let's hear your story. How did you get into burlesque? How did you get into this?
I had no clue what burlesque was. And then I was out on a date, and we ran into some friends that asked us if we were going to the burlesque show at the French Quarter. The French Quarter was closing. It was their last night. And we said, sure, we'll go. And that was the first time I met Siren Santina, Kisa Von Tisa, the whole White Lightning crowd or group then. And the moment Siren Santina came on stage, I was like, what is this? And where has it been my whole life? And I was like, how do I get involved? At that point, I knew I wasn't gonna, I mean, performing was never on my radar. And so I became what was called a booby guard. So my job was to you know, essentially be a bodyguard at shows to keep people from coming in backstage and whatnot. And then I progressed to a stage kitten, or a tomcat, as, you know, male performers would be called. So it was my job to place props on stage and clean up after an act. And then I met John, my husband, and then we got it. Both of us have a background in management. And so as the troupe grew, there was a need for that. And so we said, well, we can apply our business skills to this troupe, you know, because it runs as a business. And so, and at that point, you know, we were not performers, so it made more sense for us to being involved in that way. And so then we became managers and producers with Sarah and Santina. And then we developed Camp King Entertainment, which all of our ventures fall underneath that. So, and then that's how the rest of it was born. So, but we were doing a TV themed show, and I had an idea for a Roseanne act. And I was pitching it to some, I was like, someone should do this. Big Gay James said, well, why don't you just do it? And I was like, because I never thought about doing that. And he's like, well, I mean, the act is perfect for you. So I was like, okay. And so then that's Barry Manatees was born in with my Dan Connor act.
That's awesome. And you said, did you say Big Gay James?
Uh-huh.
I love that name. That's the best. So big Gay James, if you listen to this, and I know who you are. I've met you a few times. You're a super cool dude. But I love that name. That's like the cool, that's the greatest gay name of all time. Big Gay James. I'm digging it.
Well, there, you know, with Salome that we've had, you know, we have Rhoda Derriere as our MC now. But before
she's
that,
awesome. She is amazing, by the way. I have worked with her before, and she is, man, she is so good. She's fantastic.
Yeah. I can't speak enough of her. But before her, there was Big Gay James, and then there was Big Gay Phil and Big Gay Rob. So we had a lineage of big gays. And Rhoda said, you know, fuck that. I'm taking over. And so now we have her. So,
you know, man, I mean, see, I love the creativity too, because I mean, if you've never been to a burlesque show, it's so much more than stripping. It's so much more than that. I mean, and the acts and the creativity and the things that you guys do on stage. I mean, it's a real art, you know, it is real art.
It is. And it's a resurgent. What Salome is and what I do is considered neo burlesque. So, you know, there's traditional and neo, and we're in a resurgent of burlesque and neo is taking the, you know, that's where you're comedy and your slapstick and you know, your nerdlesque and all that comes from. You know, there's a little bit more free form to it, where with traditional there, you know, there's certain standards that you follow. And that's, you know, that's back in the day when burlesque came about, that's what there was. It was a traditional acts lasted, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. And, you know, the whole thing was you never actually saw anything. It was all about the striptease, you know, leaving it to the imagination. I mean, very rarely did you see anything. You might get a peep of a pasty here and there, but, you know, and working, you know, there's a whole legends panel behind the burlesque community. And when we get opportunity to spend time with them and hear their stories and you know, what they went through and what it was like, you know, back in the day, you know, some of these women were, you know, dating movie stars and performing for princes and all kinds of royal people and whatnot, you know, and then there was a die-off of it. And there was a stigma that kind of surrounded what burlesque was, you know, and then we hit this resurgent with neo burlesque and you know, it was really booming. And then the pandemic happened and everything kind of, you know, in the fringe arts where I like to say we're the redheaded stepchild, you know, where
no offense taken there, Barry, no offense there.
But, you know, yeah. So we're the lesser, valued of the fringe arts, but I think with the pandemic we had to be real creative in how we were presenting our art, and so it brought a new light to it. So I think coming out of this, going into, you know, the next year or two, I think there's going to be a big boom of it. It's going to become a little bit more mainstream, I think, is what we're going to see.
Well, you know, I definitely can see that happening. And, you know, I think, you know, especially for variety artists of all, you know, that there's people are wanting to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And Now, but let me go back, because I want to go back to you real quick. On the, you said that you guys were in the French Quarter, you went to a burlesque show. So prior to anything, you had no desire to be an entertainer.
I went to school for business. That's what I was going to do. Business was my focus, and I never even thought that could cross over into the entertainment world. And when I saw White Lightning that night, you know, I have four sisters, and I saw these ladies on stage. It was actually also in that show, there was burlesque and there was drag. And it was the first time I ever saw drag too. But watching Siren and Kesa perform and seeing the confidence that they had in themselves, and the confidence that the audience was giving to them, the empowerment, I was like, I wish, you know, my sisters had this, because my sisters, all four of them, you know, had dealt with body issues and image, you know, and all that growing up. And I was like, well, I just wish that they had just a bit of that confidence. And I think that's what I'm drawn to, people who have confidence, and I think that's what drew me to these ladies, was because, I mean, they were just slinging confidence all over that stage along with talent. I've never seen anyone as talented as Siren Santina. And so when I met her that first time, I was like, I could just tell, I was like, I'm meant to be a part of this, you know, and I never realized it would be to the extent that I am now, or that I would ever even be on stage myself. So.
And you're absolutely right. There is something about being a stage performer there. Well, first of all, you have to have confidence in what you're doing. You have to. And I always tell people, you know, there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. And I'm not arrogant, but I am absolutely 100% confident in what I can do, you know, and, you know, that comes with time and it builds up, but also mm-hmm. the audience feeds off your confidence too, you know, and they know, and I think your audience gets comfortable in what they're about to see, you know, they're about to see something quality because they can feed off that confidence as well.
And that's why Rhoda and Big Gay James are such great MCs, because they can, they can build that energy in the audience and encourage the audience to give it to the performers. And then, you know, as performers, we just perform even harder when we, and that's the thing, when people take our academy, that's the first thing we tell them, is that audience is there to love you no matter what happens. If you fail or fuck up or what, that audience is there just to love you. And if you can go into an act with that in mind, it just gives you so much ease when you're performing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And well, also, I mean, you know, I think some of my favorite audiences have been at variety burlesque shows and stuff that I performed on. Some of the best crowds ever. Back in the day, I remember trying out new pieces and stuff on these shows. I was like, this is a great time to maybe test this out, you know, and it was. Some of the things that are staple in my act now, you know, began there on the burlesque stage, on the, you know, the variety shows and stuff. So now does your husband, is he a burlesque performer as well?
He is not. He manages, he's behind the scenes. That's his role in all of this. And that's with him and Siren and I, that's why we make such a good team. Siren's the creative director, John is the business person, and then I'm the doer of it. So they get together and say, okay, we want to do this, and John says, all right, we're going to do this, and then it's my job to figure out how we're going to do it. So
that's super. You know what, man, and I can't praise this enough either, Barry, is, you know, my wife Antoinette, she has my back with what I do, and she handles a lot of the business side of what I do. And it's really special, especially if you're an entertainer and you've got a spouse that's got your back and support you like that. I mean, that's awesome.
No, it is. I mean, he makes all this go around and really good. And I mean, especially being a burlesque performer, if you can have a supportive spouse or significant other that, you know, supports you getting out there and taking your clothes off for people and everyone look at you. I mean, not only if you can support that, but you can book that, then you've got to.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is now how, you know, I don't know, so I have to ask, but how popular has male burlesque dancing been? And even to be more niche with it, I guess, gay men burlesque, how long has that been something that's been around for a long time?
Not for a long time. Back when, you know, burlesque first came, you very rarely saw a male performer. And back then it was a very niche thing. You know, over the past 10 years is really when, you know, male performers have come about. Most male performers were given a light of comedy. You know, if you were going to be in a cabaret, you had to be in a comedic standpoint, especially, you know, a larger male burlesque performer. Yeah, we were always the punchline, the comedy relief, you know, and so that's, we were never given the permission to be sexy on stage. And so, but I would say over the past 10 years, at least, is where we've seen, you know, and part of that was because that industry was so female driven, you know, part of it was we were feeling like we were taking up space where we weren't supposed to, you know, but then we had, you know, these female performers that were so encouraging and said, no, there's a place for you. This is, you know, this is what burlesque is all about. It's about confidence. It's about building your self-esteem, you know, and that is for females or males or you know, anything in between. And so over the past 10 years, we've seen an increase in male performers, but also an increase in variety of body shapes and sizes in male performers as well, which is amazing. I mean, because, you know, for the longest time, I had an issue because I don't have that chiseled male physique or, you know, what would be traditionally considered sexy. You know, so when I first started performing, I had to be funny. That was my goal, was I had to be funny, because no one can find me taking my clothes off to be sexy. So I have to do it in a comedic way in order to get a response from the crowd. But that was not me. I felt very hard trying to be funny. But fortunately, in that side, I fell into finding my central side, and being able to present, you know, sexy acts on stage and feeling comfortable and confident in what I was presenting.
Yeah, okay. I want to bring this up. And now this is something that I even have a difficult time even bringing up to discussion, because I think it's, well, first of all heterosexual men right now thank gay men for be willing to bring this topic up. First of all, let me say that, because as a heterosexual guy, when I bring this topic up, I almost feel like shamed for bringing it up. Like you show weakness for bringing this up. So but since you're here, I want to talk about it. There's so much BS that men get body shamed on several parts, on several body parts. We constantly get body shamed, and I'm talking as a whole, you know, and most men really, it does cause confident issues with most men, a lot of men. But most heterosexual men are too afraid to talk about it because it appears weak, and which is not true at all. But the only men I've ever heard bring up body image for men are homosexual men. So thank God for you guys fighting the good fight, man.
I mean, body image in the gay community is so toxic. It is because, you know, you're either too fat, you're too thin, you're too femme, you're too masculine. Body image is just a toxic, toxic thing in the gay community. And there is some change into that now because people are feeling empowered and they just don't give a shit anymore, and that's part of the reason why I created Bear Doll Burlesque, is because I wanted a platform for male presenting performers of all shapes and sizes to feel confident. And, you know, when I'm performing in a Bear Doll show opposed to any other show, because I'm sharing a stage with very like-minded presenting performers who traditionally wouldn't be considered, you know, a certain way to people. It's just easier to, I perform differently in that show, not in a bad way. Because I always give 100%, but there's just something when you're sharing a stage with male performers who are very like-minded with yourself, because it's a sense of taking ownership of a stage, a place that, you know, you're especially for someone like me, I've been told for years, you don't deserve to be there. You don't have a place to be there. No one wants to see that. So when, you know, a group of guys who are plus size, hairy, or, you know, super thin and whatnot, you know, just a variety of shapes and sizes, all are on a stage together presenting a show, there's just something, you know, kind of cool about that. Because no one's taking that power away from us.
That's super cool. And, you know, hey, I've got hair on my chest. I'm a dude. Is that cool again? I don't know. You can't keep up with it. It was cool. Remember the 80s, Tom Selleck. And then it went away. Then you had to have a bare chest. And now, so if hair's back, there we go, baby.
Yeah. Oh, it never went away. There was a point where you had to be muscles and slick as a...
let me do this. All right, so... Now, first of all, let me bring this up because this is a very interesting topic. Anybody who knows me well enough, and I'm sure I've mentioned it on here before on the podcast, but my son's gay. And so I've got this. I don't know why I do this, but anytime I've ever see any gay people, I just feel like I want to hug them. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're my children. I love you, you know. So how long have you and is it John, your spouse?
Yeah.
How long have you guys been together? How long have you guys been married?
We've been married for 15 years.
That is freaking awesome.
Been together 16 years. We were the first same-sex couple, marriage-wise in the state of Tennessee. We were the first same-sex couple to married couple to adopt and own property in the state of Tennessee as well.
That is freaking amazing, dude. Damn. That's a whole nother reason to have you on the podcast. That is super cool, man. You know, that means a lot to me, you know, because now my son currently lives in Las Vegas with his partner and, you know, as bad as it sucks that he lives so far away, but, you know, one day I'm already thinking like, I can't wait till one day I can have grandkids, you know, and I think about that stuff. And now, and you guys do have children, correct? You just said, yeah.
We have four.
That is awesome. And so, I mean, what has that experience been like being, you know, two gay parents raising a family in East Tennessee? So what's that like?
Well, you know, and in Anderson County too.
Oh, Anderson County?
Yeah.
First of all, most of these listeners, by the way, Barry, have no freaking clue where we're talking about. Some do, but I mean, I've got people in Russia and France. They have no, but Anderson County is the county we live in, but go ahead. They're I said we. I'm in Anderson County too, man. So cool.
You're talking about farmland, rural land. but this is where I was born and raised, and we're very fortunate in the town that we live in because it's it's very small and very liberal, like-minded, and we, you know, really have not had an issue with raising kids. But, you know, we went from having no kids to having four kids all within 9 months.
Wow. So you guys were kind of like Octomom a little bit.
Yeah, it wasn't planned.
It wasn't?
No, we...
Wait a minute. How? Okay, let's hear
it. So we became foster parents, and the first child they placed with us, so a kid that's in the foster system has to be in your home for 6 months. And so Brian, they put him in our house, and we knew the first day that he came that was our son. He looks just like John and I. It's like and his mannerisms, everything was, and so... So we knew we were going to adopt. And so we set the adoption date for 6 months to the day that he came to our house. 3 months into that, we get a call about a sibling group of three. We had always wanted older children because we felt like that there was a need there. That's what we felt like we were drawn to. And so the sibling group had a three-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 13-year-old. So they came in 3 months into us having Brian. And then they had to be in our home for, you know, another 6 months, which put us at 9 months. So in the amount of time it would take someone to carry a child, we got four.
Now, did you guys get any static or any issues for being a homosexual couple trying to adopt a child or anything like that?
Well, we did have to go through a private agency because unfortunately the placement person in Knoxville at that point would not place children with same-sex couples. So we had to go through a private agency, to become foster parents. And then we did.
Yeah. Let me say this real quick. Okay. And I got to voice my frustration with this. And I don't know how well maybe you kept up with any local news just the past, I think it was last year. Just recently, there was a man and a woman who were continuously foster parenting children and murdering these kids, starving them to death, buried the kids in the backyard. And it blows my mind that they would be hesitant about putting children in a gay home, a gay coupled house, you know, but they seem like they have no issues of putting children in psychopath homes.
Yeah. If you look at statistics,
you know what story I'm talking about, right, Barry?
The issues in the foster care system have never laid with a same-sex couple. It's always been the other ones, but you know, we're the bad influence, you know. Yeah. So we went through this private agency, became foster parents, and you know, we're very fortunate. Our family is very close-knit, and we live, very close together and in the small town that was very supportive. We only ever had, our two oldest sons had instances twice, about someone, you know, calling us a derogatory name, but they were very quick to handle that, and that was the end of it. And when we adopted Brian, the New Sentinel did an article on us, and we were afraid about doing the article because of what would come from it. And the only hate we got from that was someone commented on the Brian's weight. And I was like, so we we've been very fortunate as a same-sex couple with kids that not to run into any of that. The teachers at the schools love us because we're very stereotypical. We go overboard for everything that we do. So
I gotta be honest, man. I love the stereotypical gay dude. I do, man. My son, somewhat, if he listens to this, he's probably gonna date me, but he's kind of the stereotypical gay dude on some stuff. So but you know, well, I mean, first of all, man, that just fills my heart up. I'm so glad, you know, and that's awesome, man. That's awesome because these kids are in a fantastic home, somewhere where they're getting love and taken care of. And you know, I hope that you know, some of these adoption agencies, you know, quit bullshitting and quit making up things just to support some make-believe agenda that they have.
Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, when all these gay rights bills go up and these adoption bills go up, you know, we that affects us. We have to worry about that because, you know, if any of these bills are passed, you know, our adoption becomes null and void. John and I's marriage becomes null and void, and we have no leg to stand on, you know. So we've had to go through extreme lengths to have paperwork drawn up and you know, to just to be able to, in the case that something like that happens, we still have some kind of legal parameters around our relationship. And that's, you know, one of the things that we try to advocate for. And
is because you guys do a great job too at what you guys do. And now, were you guys the founder of Knoxville Pride? Or were you guys the founder of it?
No, Knox Pride has been around for 15 plus years. We came aboard about 4 years ago, just as volunteers. And then John ran for a board seat, and then Siren ran for a board seat. And then 2 years ago, John ran for president and became president. And so, so him and Siren sat on the board, and I'm a committee member and volunteer because we're married. The bylaws does allow for both of us to serve on the board. So, but the thing is, with the three of us, when you get one of us, you get all three of us. So, so I just serve on the committee, and then John is the current president.
Well, you know, I want to say this real quick. I remember, especially when we would try to go to Pride, as much as we could, and we would take, you know, my kids with us. And for anybody who has never been, dude, you're missing a hell of a time. It is a great, it's an awesome time, man. Fantastic entertainment, great food. It's just a great atmosphere. I look forward to, you know, going back to Pride outside, hopefully outside around people. Let's hope, keep our fingers crossed. Let's hope that can happen again. But highly recommend, if you've never been, I highly recommend, especially the one here in Knoxville.
Well, Knoxville Pride is the largest free pride in the South. And it got moved to October next year. And it's going to be a 3-day event instead of a 1-day. So on Friday night, we'll have the parade, and it's actually going to be a nighttime parade. And then Saturday will be the festival itself. And then Sunday we will have brunch in the park. And so we'll have we'll have a whole bunch of food vendors and trucks and the world, because we'll be back at World's Fair Park for that. And so we'll just have a bunch of food options in the park. So
that is awesome, man. Like I said, it's a hell of a time.
The city of Knoxville is expecting for us to hit 100,000.
Wow. Nice. That is awesome, man. Well, let's do this because I kind of trailed off. First of all, man, I can talk like gay rights and gay stuff all day, and I can even hop on a soapbox and go off. But That's another topic. We'll do this. Let's get back on the entertainment side of things, though, Barry. Now, okay, gay burlesque performer. Let me and one more little struggle question, and then we'll move past it. But being a gay burlesque performer, do you feel like you have any struggles still in entertainment, being a gay man in a burlesque performer? No,
not really. I think that is an advantage of ours because burlesque is a female-centric industry. There is some kind of comfort to, you know, having a gay male counterpart, you know, because we're definitely there to look out for our own, you know, and so I think there is a sense of comfort of having, you know, gay male performers in a show or, you know, just in the industry. And I think that's why you will see more gay performers in burlesque. There is some heterosexual male performers, and they're great performers. They really are. But in that case, you know, it is more gay male performers than heterosexual male performers. And I'll say this, I get more response and better response from heterosexual men at a show than I do anything.
That makes sense. That does make sense. Well, okay. So let me ask you this. Okay. Now, every entertainer who comes on the Abracadam podcast has to tell a hell gig story. Let's hear it, Barry Manatees. I want to hear a hell gig story.
Hell gig story. I've been very fortunate that all my gigs have been pretty good.
Something crazy has had to have happened, though. Something crazy.
Something crazy. The craziest thing that can happen in a burlesque act is your costuming malfunctioning. And that definitely happened to me. I was on stage and, it's happened several times. You just, when things are held together with snaps and Velcro and zippers, you just can't always predict what's going to happen. But there was a particular act I was doing, and I guess I just turned the wrong way and my pants just fell off at the beginning of the act. So here I am trying to hold my pants up until when they're supposed to come off, because part of my reveal was what was on my underwear. And so I was trying to keep that. And so I finally just had to just lose the pants and then just make sure that my backside was not to the audience until it was supposed to be. So
during, because I've had stuff go wrong in my show and I don't acknowledge it, I just play it off and go roll with it. So is that, that's kind of what you did. You just kind of played it off. And
that's one of the things we teach in our academy is how to recover from things. Because I mean, when you're in live performance, as much as you're prepared that something might go wrong, you never know what's going to go. It could be the music stopping. And Bear It All, we were at a festival and we were performing and our music just stopped in the middle of it. And so here we are mid performance. And we were like, do we keep going? Do we wait for them to come back on? Or, you know, we sat there for, you know, a good 2 minutes until the music came back on. And then fortunately it picked right back up where it was at. But so there's always some, I don't think I've ever been a part of a show that there hasn't been at least one type of malfunction of sorts to.
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, you can all, well, what is it? Murphy's Law. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. And yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's do this. Okay. Let's get you thinking here for a minute, man. Let's get you thinking. Barry, do you believe in time traveling? Do you believe in it?
I don't know if I believe in time traveling. I've never experienced it. I believe in all kinds of other things, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
So, well, no, what I mean, well, technically, we don't know. I mean, we don't know if it's real or not. It might be. It may not be. I'm the firm believer. I'm one of these people. I think if you can imagine it, either it does exist or it can exist. So,
yeah, I would agree with that because I do believe in that. I am a big supporter of manifestation. If you believe it and you put energy into it, then it can happen. So I believe if you believe hard enough that time travel is real, that it could be a thing.
Well, let's do this. Okay. If you could travel in time, all right. And you could only make one trip, which means you don't get to come back. Okay. If you travel, would you travel to the future or the past? And if you travel to the future, you get to change one thing about your past. If you travel to the past, well, you forget everything you know now. So it sounds like you can't go to the past and, you know, decide to play the lotto. Which one do you go, though? You go to the future or the past?
I would go to the past.
Okay. And now here's the biggie. Because, I mean, now, first of all, let me hear you answer why you chose the past and not the future. Go ahead.
Because I would go, I have always been fascinated by Abraham Lincoln. And I would go back to the time of Abe Lincoln so that I could meet him.
Okay. Now you brought this up. And now this is something that I have thought about. Okay. Matter of fact, I was just talking about Abe Lincoln yesterday. There's a little rumor that floats around, oh, Honest Abe. And I don't know if it's even, would you call it a conspiracy? I don't know. But.
That he was gay?
That he was gay. Yes.
That's part of the reason why I have been. You know, anytime someone asks that question, if you had a dinner party and you could invite, you know, anybody living or dead, and you know, who would your four people, five people be? He's always my first one because I just always find him so fascinating. But also, to me, he's the original gay bear. I mean,
he was into wrestling, right? He was a wrestler, so. Yeah. And I heard some other things that just start, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was other things about him that made me think like, was he gay? What could he have been gay? I don't know. And I'm sure he was gay, even if he was, but I'm sure there's a lot of gay guys that we have no clue of now, but I'm sure. But yeah, that's cool. So you'd like to go back and meet, you know, arguably one of the greatest presidents of all time.
Yep.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Now, why did you choose not to go to the future?
Because I enjoy the journey. And I don't, I am trusting my journey. So I don't want to know what's at the end. I want to experience it as I go along.
You know, I'm totally with you on that too. There's some people that, you know, there's actually some people out there that if they could know their future, they would, or if they could see the future, you know, stuff like that. Not me, you know, and that is something else that just, this is new for me, but, and anybody listening, you know, this is something to really think about too, is a lot of times we spend most of our life, oh, when I get to this, this is, when I get there, that's when I'm going to be happy. Or when I get there, that's when I'm going to be happy. No, it's happening now, you know?
Yeah.
It's happening now.
It took me a long time to get to that point because I grew up in a family that didn't have money, you know? And so I always thought, oh, when I get to a point where I have money, things will be perfect. Life will be great. You know, and I got to the point where I had money and I was like, oh, no, now there's these things. So when I get to that, then life will be. And, you know, it was just always chasing that when I get to and I had to learn, you know, it's not about getting to it. It's about enjoying getting to it.
That is the truth. Absolutely the truth. Fantastic advice too there, Barry Manatees. Now let's do this. Before we get out of here, I've got to do this. This is for special people that come onto the Abracadabra podcast. Just kidding. It's for everybody, but you're special too. But here we go. We're going to do this. Let's see here. Do you believe in mind reading, Barry?
I do.
All right. Well, I'm going to read your mind, brother. I'm going to get in your mind and redecorate. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. What I'm going to do, I'm going to show some cards. I want you to think of one of those cards. Just get a look at one and think of it. You got it in your mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't forget, or I sound stupider. Okay. If you forget, you do have one in your mind.
I do.
All right. Perfect. We're going to try this. Give me just a second here. We're going to lose the cards. Here we go. All right. Hold on. I'm going to try this. I'm going to cut the deck. I'm going to try to cut the deck. I'm going to cut the deck right here. Okay. Now I'm obligated, Barry. I'm obligated. I can't get out of this. Okay. This is just me and you. And you see that I'm obligated. I have cut the deck. So I can't get out of this. And FYI, if I get this right, you need to act impressed, at least sound impressed, because they can't see the look on your face. Okay. For the first time, Barry Manatees, what is the card you were only thinking of?
Are you going to tell you?
Say it out loud so they can hear you.
Three of diamonds.
The three of diamonds. Ladies and gents, I have cut to one card and one card only. The three of diamonds.
I am very impressed. If you could see my face right now, I don't smile at a whole lot of things, but I'm smiling ear to ear for this.
Thank you, Barry. You have been abracadammed, my man. You have been abracadammed. Well, I tell you what, man. So you did name some other things, though, and I'm sorry. I apologize. I can't remember off the bat, but I mainly know you from your burlesque performing and Knox Pride. But what else is it that you guys produce?
We produce Sound Me Cabaret, which we do have a show in January at South Press. And then we Bear It All. We also do Knox Fringe, which you've been a part of that.
That was fun. Love that. That was so fun.
And then the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival, which will be back in 2022.
Gotcha. Now, where do you guys do the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival? That's out in, is that in Gatlinburg or is it around here?
We do two nights at the Bijou Theater, and then our opening night is usually at one of our local venues.
Now, which one was it? Was that the one that was Dolly? Didn't Dolly?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, we got to hear that real quick. All right, guys. The queen of country, Miss Dolly Parton, came to one of these shows, showed up at one of their shows. If in case you're wondering how good of a show this is, Dolly Parton was there. Okay, let's hear that real quick, Barry. What was it like meeting Dolly? Tell me, let's hear it.
It was everything. If you... Whatever you think about, it's true. So we, during the summer, we had gotten the notification that she was thinking about coming to a show. She wanted to come to her niece was a headliner at our first festival. And she wanted to come to that one, but because we were at a bar, she, you know, couldn't come to it. So once we moved to the Bijou, you know, she had wanted to come to it. The first year we were there, her schedule just didn't align for her to be there. And so this last festival that we had, the summertime, we got the notification that she wanted to come. And so we had to make all these arrangements and plans for her to be there, not knowing until the week for sure that she was going to be able to make it schedule-wise. You know, so we had to meet with all of her security, and everything. So they had to come in, we had to do a walkthrough and create a, you know, entrance and exit plan, and how, where do we put her that, you know, she's not visible, you know, and then talking to her, the whole point of her not wanting to be visible was actually super sweet. She said, you know, this is not my thing. She said, I'm here to support you all, and I don't want to take away from the performers. She's like, I understand who I am, and I know that when I go somewhere, it's a, you know, it's an ordeal. She said, but I don't want to take away from the people on stage that I'm here to support. She said, that's not, it's not the Dolly Show. It's the Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival. And so here we are, we were thinking, oh, we've got to make her as invisible as possible because of safety reasons and whatnot. And so the day of, her security came in that morning, they set up a, you know, a mobile hospital. We go through, you know, the exit and entrance plan again, and we put her up in a box, and we, you know, we dimmed the lights in the box. The plan was for her to go into the seat, you know, just like 15 minutes before the show, you know, to not make as much commotion and whatnot. And so we're sitting there that day with her security, and they let us know she's on her way. So we're like, oh, this is happening. Dolly Parton is coming. So her and her sisters drove from Nashville for their ladies' night out, their girls' night out, which she shared with us that she has not got to do that in probably 20 years.
Wow. Wow. And Dolly Parton chose your show to do this.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So they come, they get there. And so we're talking to her security, he's on the phone with them, and we hear him talking, and then he says, all right, we'll make the plan. And so he gets off the phone with them, and he says, well, when she gets here, they're going to take a few minutes to get freshened up and whatnot, and she wants the three of you all to come on her bus and meet her. And so we were like, okay, what? And then he said, you know, once the show is over, and he said, she'll go back to the bus, the theater will get cleared out, and then she's going to come back and meet all the performers. And so they get there, and then they come and get us, John, Siren, and I, to go on the bus. And we walked on the bus, and it was just an overwhelming feeling. I mean, you just could feel nothing but goodness and in love and such positive energy, you know. And she took the time to learn who each of us were and what we did with the festival. She took pictures with us, we always do a pre-show meetup with all the performers backstage. You've been a part of that, and so at that point that's when we were letting everyone know what was going on, because we didn't want someone to go on stage and happen to look up and then see. So we let everyone know. And the first time we said it, there was just quiet. And I was like, did they not hear what I said? And everyone was like, no, we were just in shock. And so we did the show. You know, she went back to her bus. We cleared the theater. And she came back out and sang to us, and she was able to point out specific people and talk about their acts and whatnot. So I was like, I got to strip for Dolly Parton on the beach.
That is awesome. And you know what? That's an awesome way to end on a podcast. Barry, man, this has been awesome, dude. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Before we get out of here, though, let the listeners know where they can learn more about Salome, where they can learn about Bear It All, Knox Pride. Where can they find out about Barry Manatees?
I mean, you can. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Barry Manatees. SalomeCabaret.com, KnoxPride.com is where you can find all that stuff at. So like I said, we're hitting the stage back in January. January 8th, we'll be at South Press. Those tickets will go on sale in the next week. So there'll be a limited amount of tickets. So those will go fast. So look out for that.
Awesome. Once again, Barry, thank you so much for coming out of Abracadam, man. This has been a blast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Abracadamets, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Barry Manatees. Such a great person he is. Fantastic performer. And like I said, he is involved with so many things in the Knoxville, Tennessee area. A lot of things burlesque, Knox Pride, Smoky Mountain Burlesque Festival. So much stuff. And how about that? He got to perform for Dolly Parton. That is amazing. Anyways, that being said, Abracadamets, focus on those goals. Be thinking about what you want to get done for 2022, baby. Getting stuff done, son. That's what we all need to be doing. And like always, Abracadamets, thank you for listening.
Yes, awesome. Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party!